Hi, I'm Lisa Levin.
And I'm Julie Sapper.
We're the co-founders of Run Farther and Faster and co-hosts of the podcast under the same name.
Well, we started this podcast as a Boston Marathon-focused podcast based on the experiences from our combined 31 finishes. We cover all things running-related.
We've coached runners of all levels and goal distances all over the world for over 13 years.
Thanks so much for joining us. We are so excited you're here.
Hi, Julie.
Hi, almost birthday girl. You've got a big birthday coming up. Happy early birthday.
Actually, I'm really excited to get into a new age group. I'm done with the 45 to 49 age group. Ladies are
no
fast.
No kidding.
I'm ready. Like, I think that's the nice thing about being a runner is you actually look forward to the next age group, because by the time you get to the end of one particular age group, you're ready to move to the next one. So I'm ready.
First of all, you've done phenomenally at the top of your current age group. I mean, look what you just did at Boston, which is amazing. So you should be very proud. Lots of applause to you. And now you get to roll into the 50 to 55. But most importantly, I'm excited for you to share 50 with me. And also, I hope that you know how loved and appreciated you are. And I hope that you take the time as you enter this milestone to just reflect on all the things you've accomplished and just how much you are loved in this world.
Thank you. Well, I'll be celebrating by doing a race, which is very appropriate. I don't usually race this close to Boston, but I couldn't turn down the opportunity when a local race that we have here, the GW Parkway Classic, which is an iconic race. And amazingly, I've never run it in all of my years here, which is just surprising, but it's on my birthday this year. So how more appropriate could it be to do a race on my birthday? Everyone's like, how are you celebrating? I'm like, I'm running a race. What else would you expect me to do? So that's my plan.
That is perfect. And when I was looking at the website for the race, because I was doing race prep for one of our runners for the GW Parkway Classic, noted on the front of the website is that it's the 40th anniversary. So you were 10 years old when that race started.
Not even running. I hated running at that age, I think. So yeah, so exciting. And so I'll report back. It seems like a great race. I've heard a lot of great feedback and the weather should be good again. So I'm excited about it.
Yeah. So last week we gave a part one of our Boston Marathon recap. I think we provided in great detail all of the things that we did over the weekend. And then you provided a wonderful recap of your race. And for this episode, we wanted to talk about some of the accomplishments of the pro field, our past podcast guests, and our own runners. We had 17 runners run the Boston Marathon this year, and many of them have stories that they permit us to share, and we've highlighted those on our social media as well, but we really wanted to dive into those because we think there are so many lessons that can be learned from our runners' experiences in training and then racing Boston, or in some cases, not racing. And we thought it would be really nice to kind of recap this while it's fresh in our head and review that so that those who are listening in the future can listen to this episode and say, okay, well, this is how those folks train. And this is what happened to them on this day, on a record hot day at the Boston Marathon. So before we get started and focus on our own runners, we just wanted to mention something that we did not have the stats for last week. And I think this is really important to note. And that is, the majority of the Boston Marathon participants did not have the race that they targeted this year. And that is because, of course, it was a very hot year. There were a whopping 2,974 encounters at the medical tents during the marathon, according to the BAA medical coordinator, Chris Torianos. Of those interactions, 1,288 occurred along the course, while 1,686 happened at the finish line. Most of the people needed help treating heat-related issues. Unfortunately, at least 40 people suffered heat stroke, while others were beset by cramping, nausea, and swelling. The temperatures climbed to as high as 73 degrees, and this is above what meteorologists, including our very own Tevin, projected, and the lack of cloud cover, the heat-absorbing roadways, and just the lack of tree coverage, because leaves aren't on the trees yet in Boston, on many of the trees, made some of the parts of the course feel as warm as 75 degrees. So this year's race was the hottest race since 2017. And while it was nowhere near as hot as the 2012 race, which reached 89 degrees, the heat was brutal, especially for those who are not acclimated, which is the majority of the runners participating in this race. So we just wanted to share that information because we know that there are a lot of folks listening out there that weren't so thrilled with their race results. And this is such an important data point to recognize that the conditions were not what you trained in.
Yeah. And we could see that at the finish line. I remember we were at Fire and Ice, which is right next to the medical tent. And as we were sitting there, I just saw a constant stream of stretchers and wheelchairs coming into the medical tent with, you know, I don't know exactly what it was, but people looked like they were not in great shape, probably from the heat. And it was just a constant stream. So that number that you gave, that 1,686 happening at the finish line, you have to think about how many people that is coming through at a time. If you have like, you know, 5 hours, that's like over 300 per hour. And that's what it looked like. It was just constant stream of people bringing, of medical staff bringing people in. And Rachel Miller, who is a PT that we work with here and a good friend of ours, who was in Boston for a conference of medical directors or medical coordinators. And she was in the finish line tent at the on race day and said she spent the entire time on what they call the heat deck, which is basically a tub of cold water that they dunk people into when their body temperatures are too high. And she said she had runners coming in with temperatures as high as 108 degrees. Many of those had to be sent to the hospital for heat related issues. So it really, as beautiful a day as it was for the spectators and as nice as it was to not have a day that was freezing cold and raining, they, like you said, the heat, especially because the majority of participants were not acclimated. That was, as Tevin had mentioned in our podcast with him, was the hottest day on record since October for the Boston area. So if you lived in the Boston area, if you live in our area, we have not been running through heat. And even our runners who train through heat in Florida and other hotter places had struggled. You may be heat acclimated, but it doesn't mean you're going to be able to run faster in heat. It just means your body handles it better. So anytime there are extreme temperatures, high or low, your body has to adapt. Like you cannot, your body cannot run. And we can see this from the elites down through, you know, through the last people to finish, that your body just cannot run the your ideal or your projected pace in those extreme conditions. So I think even I, who I mentioned last week, I thought it was great. I love the weather. I love heat. Like I run okay in it, but my time was likely not as fast as it would have been had the temperatures been a little bit. I was comfortable. I loved it. I had a great experience on the course because the weather was warm, but I'm sure my body could have done more if it wasn't hot out. So I think that's something that a lot of our runners were grappling with after the race, was this feeling of executing a well executed race, but it maybe didn't result in the time that they were looking for, and kind of coming to terms with that. And we've watched it over the last week with our runners, kind of going through the process of processing the race after and coming back at the end and saying, you know what, I realized after listening to podcasts or hearing race reports or really looking at what the conditions were and looking at the stats, I realized I had a good day. So it's taken a little time, I think, though, for people to really kind of wrap their heads around that.
Absolutely. And I think that's the allure of the marathon and why we keep coming back to it. If conditions were always perfect and courses were always the same, the challenge of the marathon would not be as alluring. But because each time you run a marathon, particularly Boston with all of its microclimates and the way Boston is with respect to weather and how unpredictable it is year to year, the weather creates a story. The weather creates an additional challenge. So this year will be known as the hot year. And instead of saying, I had a PR, you'll say, yeah, I ran it that year. That was brutal. And here's what happened to me. Or I ran it that year and I did pretty well, all things considered. So the purpose of this conversation today, first of all, is to normalize that it's okay to have a perfect training cycle and not be able to execute the race that you normally would be able to execute. And it's also okay to have a training cycle where you thought you were going to target some type of PR and you decide to adjust your goals and run for fun. And it's okay to have a not so great training cycle and get out there and run the race based on less mileage than normal because you know you can do it and it's Boston. So we're going to just talk about all three of those scenarios. But before we do, we also wanted to highlight because we thought it was important to update everyone because so many folks have listened to our podcast over the seasons and heard from runners. We went back and looked at how our past podcast guests have done at Boston this year. And here are some of the stats from them. So some of you may remember Gene Dykes. He is 76 years old and is a world record holder in his age group. He once again finished first in his age group at Boston and ran a 3:28:43. Another phenomenal age grouper we've had on our podcast, Lisa Veneziano, was first in her age group at age 59. She ran a 2:56:36. I saw Lisa on the course when I was at mile 24. She looked like she was having the best time. Gina Rouse, who was on our podcast as a Masters Pro this year, she ran a 2:51 and placed sixth in her age group at age 44. And I just want to mention that the first three in her age group were Edna Kiplagat, Sarah Hall, and Des Linden. And Gina was sixth. Liz Kamey, who was on our show this season, she finished in 2:55, her first run in the pro field at age 40. Alexandra Niles, Allie, also age 40, finished in 3:01. Matt Wilpers, who was a guest on our podcast a few years ago, finished in 3:01. Dr. Benita Stevens, who was a guest a few weeks ago, finished in 3:54. Our panelist, Elisa Harvey, finished in 3:41. And then we had Joe Drake, who was on our podcast. He runs in the coordination impairment category. He won that. And Kelly Bruno, who was on our panel, she won her category in lower limb impairment. And lastly, Brenda Hodge, who was a guest on our podcast a few years ago, she ran a 3:47 at age 52, her first post-breast cancer PR. So congratulations to all of our previous guests. I hope I didn't miss anyone, but it was fun to put that together and get all those times.
Yeah, they all seem to have pretty good days.
Yeah, but it's all relative because some right. of them put out posts about how they were disappointed. I mean, to me, they all did amazing, but it's all based on perspective. So we're going to talk about that. So Lisa, do you want to kick off the first lesson that we have here today?
Yeah, well, the first lesson is that perfect training cycles don't always produce a perfect race day, and this is really particularly frustrating. I've had this a few times myself, where you feel like everything came together. You get to the start line healthy. You got in all your workouts. You did your carb loading. You got your sleep, and everything's great. And then something happens on race day that is out of our control that makes it harder to reach your potential. And that the first thing that comes to mind for me is Indy Monumental a few years ago. I had a great training cycle. I had, I just felt like everything came together, had great races, like tune-up races leading up to Indy. I felt like I was in really good shape. And that year Indy had high winds, storms, like it was crazy weather. I still have the screenshots of the we were watching the meteorologist in our hotel room the day before, and they were showing like these like red like spots on the radar and these weather warnings. And I was like, you have to be kidding me. And how frustrating was that to feel like I trained and everything was perfect, and here's this day I'm given? And I still remember just thinking, okay, I had to, like, at some point, at first I was really frustrated. And I remember looking for other races to do, like thinking, okay, can I go somewhere else in the country and find better weather conditions that like same weekend or the weekend after? And it was ridiculous. I was finding these like crazy races in places that was going to take me, I was going to lose a lot of money on my flights in the hotel in Indy. And finally just coming to the realization that, look, it is what it is. It's a one race day. It's a few hours, and I'm just going to have to control what I can. And that's going to be my approach to race day. And we had that this year at Boston. We had runners going into Boston that knew that they were not great hot weather runners. And they either decided, I'm going to go out there and I'm going to have fun and I'm going to get to the finish line healthy and get my medal. Or they raced, but they adjusted their strategies and they adjusted. And we talked to them about, dialing back their paces and adjusting their paces. So, conditions affect everyone differently. So going into a race, whether that is for me, that would be, you know, Boston 2018, waking up and seeing that that was what the weather was going to be. I adjusted my strategy that year, which was just survive to the finish line, right? Like just stay warm, don't get hypothermia and finish. So different conditions affect people differently. And that's just, you know, again, something that's out of our control. And I think that our runners did a really good job in reframing the day and adjusting their strategy and recognizing that it didn't mean that they didn't have a productive training cycle. It just meant that they had to do the best with the day they were given.
Yeah, I think what I'm so proud of with respect to all of our runners is that it takes a little bit of not having an ego to adjust your race pace, especially when you have really focused on training at a certain marathon pace where you've really focused on a time that you want to achieve, and deciding to change your strategy and adjust your race pace before you start a race. It takes a lot of effort to do that, because when you train for a race, it's not just about the physical training. It's the mental training. It's the visualizing you running that pace. So then to all of a sudden have to adjust it and say, I'm not going to do that before the race even starts, to say, I'm not even going to try to run my race pace when I'm feeling good early on the race, but I'm going to, before the race even starts, adjust. That, to me, that really is a skill, and it's something to be admired. So we have some runners who made that conscious decision before the race even started. And I have to say, they finished maybe 10 minutes off their goal time. It's hard to trust that, because there's always going to be a part of you when you toe the starting line, even though when the conditions aren't ideal. Well, maybe if I try my race pace, and if I don't feel great, I'll dial it back. But if you can have the ability to reason with yourself and say, you know what, I'm going to dial it back before I even start, typically the race is going to turn out even better for you. You're not going to get the PR, but you're going to be closer to your PR because you made the conscious decision to dial it back very early on the race before you deplete your energy even more in hot weather. So I'm very proud of what our runners did out there, because so many of them did that. Did any of our runners have PRs on Marathon Monday at Boston? No one had a PR, but a lot of our runners had races that exceeded their expectations because they ran with such a smart strategy. So for example, one runner I want to mention is our runner, Carrie. She had a goal that she wanted to achieve something in the 340s. And before the race even started, she decided to dial back her race pace by like 15 seconds, 20 seconds. And guess what? Over the course of the race, that amounted to about overall 10 to 12 minutes, I think. She still qualified for the following year for Boston. She finished 10 minutes off her goal, and she felt really good finishing. But that took for her some discipline to say, I'm going to disregard my goal marathon pace and dial it back before the race even starts. So that's someone that, and so many of our runners did that. And I'm really, really impressed with their restraint and their willingness to try that tactic, and it paid off. So that is a lesson we just really want to share with everyone, is that when you make the commitment to dial back your pace during a hot weather race, the outcome is going to be a lot more positive than if you decide to do that in the middle of your race.
Yeah. And most of our runners, I think, made that conscious decision. And as a result, we did not have really any runners who crashed and burned at the end, where they were either in a medical tent or they had to walk at the finish, you know, to the finish, or they felt horrible when they crossed the finish. You know, they might have been slower than what they anticipated, but they finished, they crossed the finish line, they crossed a strong, which, as the stats that you mentioned earlier indicated, that didn't happen to everyone. And my hunch would be that a lot of those people went out at their intended race pace and didn't respect that we can't run that pace no matter what we try to do. There's really nothing we can do. All the electrolytes, all the pre-cooling, all the whatever you want to try to do, you can't really keep up with the heat. So
for sure. And I also really like what one of our runners, Susan, did, and that was she had multiple goals. So rather than approaching her race with, oh, it's not going to be my day, I'm not going to achieve my goal, she went to goal B and then she went to goal C. So she came out of her race with the time that she had not intended, because of course it was very hot. And she has said herself, I'm not a hot weather runner, but she's a very seasoned Boston marathoner. And she was able to come away with that from the race achieving one of her three goals. And I think that's a great way to approach a race. So then in the middle of the race, you feel like you're still running with a goal, with a purpose, with excitement, and not feeling like the race is controlling you, but rather you're still in control.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. So we also have runners, though, who actually decided to treat the Boston Marathon more as a victory lap. And that is another way to approach Boston. And that is a great way to approach the race, because we just talked about the fact that Boston is a race where weather is a huge part of it, and you can do all of the perfect training in the world, but you may get a day like many did on Monday where you just can't execute. So for some folks, they look at Boston from the get-go as a victory lap, but it's very important to treat Boston with respect, because even a victory lap at Boston is a hard race because it is a hard course. So we also want to give a shout out to our runners who knew they weren't going to Boston to race, but they still respected the distance, respected the course, and respected the training. And as a result, those runners not only had great races in the heat, but they also had a great time. And they too finished strong. They finished knowing that they were going to feel okay. They finished without injury. And I think that's also a really important lesson, because so many people say, all right, I qualified for Boston. I'm just going to run it for fun. I'm not going to take the training that seriously because I'm just running it for fun. No matter how fun you may want to treat Boston, it is still a hard course, even when you're running at your conversational pace.
Right. And then you add on the variables that we have in Boston, particularly the weather, the wind, and it makes it even harder. So you really do have to go in prepared, but maybe, like you mentioned, without the expectation of time. And I think our runners who did that really took a lot of joy out of the race, because they didn't have a time, a goal in their head that they had to then revise at the start line. They just, you know, knew that they, you know, they just wanted to finish it feeling strong. So that thing takes a lot of pressure off. I do think it's hard. There have been many years I've gone to Boston and said, I'm requalified for next year. This is just for fun. I've done the training, but you get there, you get to the start line and the adrenaline is going. And Boston is a hard place. Boston, in the environment of Boston, is very, you know, it's a lot of fast runners and it's a lot of very competitive runners. And even the people who say they're going to go just run, and you can sell yourself that. But when you get to that start line, you really need self-discipline to actually execute that. But like you said, either way, you have to be prepared for the distance and for the downhills. Those can really, especially if you're running it easy, those downhills can really tear you up.
I think also for the folks who did decide to run Boston as a celebration, a lot of our runners this year in particular ran for charity. Some of them had bibs in their seated corrals, because at the Boston Marathon, if you qualify but you don't meet the buffer and you run for charity, you can still be seated in a corral with the time that you qualified. So we had runners who were in seated corrals and we had runners who were in the fourth wave, and mad props to anyone in the fourth wave, because of course, by the time they started, it was the aforementioned 73 degree temperatures. It was a lot warmer in that wave than those who started, of course, in earlier waves. And by attaching meaning to your race, that too kind of shifts perspective. So when you're running as a celebration, you're celebrating that you qualified, you're enjoying the course, you're enjoying the crowds, which were phenomenal last Monday, you are also celebrating the fact that you raised a lot of money. So I'm so, so proud of our charity runners this year. I want to give a particular shout out to one of our charity runners, and that is our runner, Dawn. She came to us running for the Dana-Farber, and Dawn's daughter, Zoe, 2 years ago on April 15th, 2022, was diagnosed with leukemia at age 7. And Dawn decided, when she saw that the Boston Marathon in 2024 was on the same date, April 15th, the date of her daughter's diagnosis, she made the decision that she wanted to take back that day. So Dawn, who's a runner but had never run a marathon, decided to run for Dana-Farber, raise money for where her daughter is treated right now, and show her daughter that she too can do hard things. And Dawn ran her first Boston Marathon last Monday and her first marathon last Monday. and did so with the support of her family, including her daughter, Zoe, which Dana-Farber and the BAA gave the royal treatment to. And it was so meaningful for us to be able to be a small part of her journey, to watch her train for her first marathon while juggling what no parent should ever have to juggle, in addition to a demanding career, and just being a parent to her kids. And then, of course, navigating treatment. And she did that and trained for a marathon through the winter and just crushed it. And so that's someone who, of course, just wanted to finish, but there was so much meaning behind her race. And being a part of that and witnessing that was just so special for the both of us. And we just wanted to share that with our listeners. And runners are phenomenal people, and people connected to the running community, including Dana-Farber, are phenomenal. And it was just a real treat for us to be a part of that. So shout out to all of the charity runners, including all of our charity runners this year. It's a huge part of the Boston Marathon. It's such an important part of the Boston Marathon. And for those who ever doubt the charity component in this race, it is the race. It is such an important component of Boston. Boston would not be Boston without the charity component. And we are so proud to be participants in the marathon and run alongside the folks that raise so much money for such important causes, including Dana-Farber.
Yeah, very well said. I think sometimes the charity runners at Boston get a bad rap, and totally unnecessary. Like you said, it's a really integral part. And what's nice about the Boston charities is that they're all directly tied to the Boston community. I think it's really important to the residents of Boston and the cities and towns that open up the roads, is that part of the day is about giving back to the community organization. So it's really, really meaningful. And a lot of those stories are more touching and motivating and really inspiring than those of people who train for it. And, you know, those are also very inspiring. But, you know, for those who can qualify and get in with the qualifying time, you know, I think there's an added meaning, like you said, for those who've raised a lot of funds for causes that are important to them.
For sure. And then the next lesson we want to talk about is something that I think everyone can relate to. Sometimes you just have a training cycle that didn't go well, and you go into your goal race without a lot of options because you want to run your goal race. You know that it won't be the race of your life, but you know you can get through it, and you're not going to not run your goal race because it's important to you, whether it's Boston or a different race. Now, we're not saying to be irresponsible, of course, and if you're undertrained and you could possibly get injured, you shouldn't run your race. But if you're undertrained because things happen in your training cycle and you know you can get through it, go do it. I mean, it won't be your best race, but you shouldn't hesitate to take the opportunity to run it if it's important to you and you know you won't get hurt. So we had this situation with one of our runners who's also been a podcast guest, and that is our friend Eric Melby. Eric's amazing. For those who don't remember, Eric is 76 years old, and this was his 15th Boston Marathon. He is a phenomenal runner and just a wonderful human. And he is a really competitive racer too. And with Eric's permission, we're sharing what happened to him during this training cycle. Eric had the misfortune between basically December and April. He had not one, not two, but three minor medical procedures, which required him after each one to take off about 10 days of running. He could do like light exercise, but no strength training and no running. In addition to that, in between that, he also had COVID. Ridiculous. But Eric is a strong runner and has an inordinate amount of cumulative mileage from all of his years of running. And he's so familiar with the Boston course, and he's such a smart runner. And with his physician's permission, he was given the go, the green light to go ahead and run Boston. So what we did for Eric is we provided a race plan and a strategy so that he could get through the race. He knew it wasn't going to be a PR, but it was important to him, and he wanted to get out there and do it. He had a good time. Was he happy with his race time? No. But he was proud, and he understood that he did what he should have done on that day. He didn't push himself. He ran. He met himself where he was. He had to walk sometimes, but he got through it. And to be honest, he was only like basically a half hour off of what he probably would have done on a hotter day, which is really amazing because he really had very little training. Two lessons from this. Number one, it's okay to have a crappy training cycle and race just to get it done, as long as you are not going to set yourself up for injury, which Eric did not. He took it very easy on this race. He did not even try to race it. Number two, if you find in your training cycle that you have hiccups, that's normal. It's a lot less normal to have a perfect training cycle. Things happen. We are not professional runners. Even professional runners have hiccups, but life happens. And most training cycles are not perfect. So just giving a plug, that's why having a coach is really helpful, because a coach will help you navigate through those hiccups and give you the confidence to go for your goal, or tell you, you know what, this is probably not the best decision right now, and guide you through that too. And that's what we did with Eric. We have a great partnership with him. We talked about all of the options, and there was no question in our mind that he would be able to finish the race safely. And he ran even easier because of the hot weather. And he's a hot weather runner too, so we weren't concerned about that for him. So he finished his 15th Boston. He already has a qualifier for next year, and we're excited to see him back next year for his 16th. And we're just super proud of him for overcoming many obstacles over the last few months, getting to Boston and crossing that finish line.
Yeah. And you raise a good point too. I think we can talk about this a little bit as well. You know, many of our runners who didn't have a perfect day for whatever reason, mostly for the weather, have talked to us afterwards about using that fitness for a second shot at another race. And what does that look like? And that really looks different for every person, and it has to be very individualized. First of all, you have to really want it. A lot of our runners are just like, you know what, I'm tired, I'm done, I need a recovery cycle. If you don't really want it, if there's not a reason to really do it, it's not really something you should be considering to do a second marathon. But if it's something that you really want and you really want to test that fitness that you built, the tricky part is that we're getting into summer, and most of the races that are going to be now, you know, in the near future are probably going to be risky. You know, they're going to have a risk for higher temperatures, global warming, whatever it is. But the, you know, temperatures heading into next week already are in our area are starting to go pretty high. But we have talked to several of our runners about the possibility of a second shot and using the fitness that they built during this cycle on another race. And again, that's a very, like you talked about having a relationship with a coach that you can talk through that. What does that look like? What does that mean in terms of taper and rebuilding? What does the timing look like? Where do you do it? Where are you going to, you know, where are you going to find a course that is favorable for really optimizing your fitness? And, you know, how do you recover and make sure that you're, you know, doing two marathons in one cycle isn't going to set you back for the fall or for future. So I think that's, you'd mentioned having a good relationship with a coach and having that discussion. And that reminded me of some of our runners who are saying like, hey, I think I could have gone a little faster if the weather is better. What do you think about doing another marathon? And that's, again, an individual discussion that has to depends on a lot of different factors.
Yeah. And I feel like we forgot to mention one other element, and that is for those who did not finish the Boston Marathon, that's okay too. How smart were you to get off that course if the weather wasn't serving you well? Because it's biological. We can't control how we respond to hot weather. Some of us run better in it, some of us don't. Whether you're acclimated or not, there are certain limitations. And we mentioned earlier, of course, that there were people who were taken to the hospital, several incidents of heat stroke. We would never want that to happen to any of our runners. And so for those who decided not to finish, kudos to you. So proud of Bree Bamer. Bree was also a panelist. We really hope we're able to release the podcast recording of that soon. We should get that from the BAA soon. Bree was set to run in the pro field, and Bree talked about on a podcast recently, the Another Mother Runner podcast, that she decided to stop at mile 11 because her Achilles was killing her. And she did the calculus in her head and said, do I want to finish this race and possibly set myself back for a year? Or do I want to get off the course at mile 11 and take what I got and think of this weekend as a gift? And I loved what she said, because I wish more runners thought this way, because crossing the finish line and injuring yourself is not better than getting off a course that you can prevent that from happening. Of course, we can't predict all of this, but if you pretty much know that if you finish a race, you're going to set yourself back with a tremendous injury, get off the course. No one is going to think you're a quitter. They're going to think you're smart. And who cares what people think? You got to do what's best for your body. You only have one body. So yes, set goals, get out there, do the best you can, but also kudos to those that know their limits and know that it's important to look at everything as a long game and to not put yourself in a hole, because you want to be able to cross that finish line at the expense of your health and safety.
Right. And those people who did step off saved their bodies if they want another shot at a marathon. You know, we're the runners that ran the entire race and want to try another marathon. That's, you know, that's a hard turnaround to make. But we tell our runners this often in races that they're going into, that they're not sure if the weather is hot or something, we just aren't sure they're going to be able to make it through that race. We say, if you feel like you need to step off that course and save yourself for another day, for a better day, do it. Because putting 26.2 miles in, even if it's easy, even if it's not at your race pace, is still a lot of mileage.
Oh my gosh. Yeah, for sure. And it doesn't matter whether you're racing or not. If you're hurt, you're hurt. And you're still on your feet just a little too long. That can really put you out for a long time. So yeah, I really appreciate Bree talking about that a lot, because she's had to DNF a couple of times and she's very open about it. And that's why she's such a great role model. She's transparent. She talks about things that are important. And I love that she mentioned the long game and the importance of preserving your body. So as we close out this episode, I think there's a couple of key points that we brought up here that are themes. And the first is, the weather is not a determinant of your fitness. We all respond to hot weather differently. If you didn't have the race of your life, that just means you don't race as well in the heat. Doesn't mean you're not fit or that you didn't train well. Speaking of which, a bad race, a race that you perceive as bad, does not mean you did something wrong. Don't beat yourself up. The conditions were not favorable for you to race, or maybe there was another factor, but that doesn't diminish what you did. It doesn't diminish your accomplishment. Try to remember that you ran the freaking Boston Marathon. You did amazing. And when you think about what things you could do better the next year, also remember, you cannot control the weather. You can only control how you respond to the conditions. And you did what you could on the day that you had. Third, times don't define you. We didn't talk about times on this podcast at all, except mentioning our guests and the elites. We talked about how people did, how they achieved goals that were unexpected on a day that was difficult. And so I think, in a nutshell, we talk about this all the time, your times don't define you. The race isn't about what you did between mile one and 26.2. Often the race is about the memories you made, how you felt, what happened before and after the race, and what fun things occurred during the race.
And the entire training cycle. The training cycle for these races is 3-4 months. That is a significant chunk of your time for the year. And that just putting in the work to get to the start line is, to me, that's almost all of it. The start line, the race day is a few hours. Very small portion. So all of that work and the dedication and the determination and the decision to show up at the start line is really what is, it causes growth. It like you said, it gives you the memories. It gives you the sense of accomplishment. You know, it's nice to have a great race day where that all comes together and it's reflected, but that doesn't always happen. And I think our discussion today highlights how different ways to approach that and how to come into it and leave the race with feeling good about the decisions that you made.
Well said. Well, Lisa, I hope you have a very happy 50th birthday. Happy, happy birthday to you. Love
Thanks,
being
Julie.
On this journey with you.
Thanks, Welcome. Julia. You set a great example for 50, so I'm looking forward to joining you.
Thank you. Have a great week. Bye.
You too, Julie. Bye.
Thank you so much for listening to the Run Farther and Faster Boston Marathon podcast. We want to give a special thanks to our editor, Aaron Bryant. And if you enjoyed this episode and enjoy listening to our podcast, please share it with others. And please leave a review if you haven't done so already on iTunes. Thanks for listening and have a great week.